It's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to another week of the 9 to Noon Show. It is Monday, the 16th of June, 2025. How are you keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed, and I hope you had a good weekend. And we're here to keep you going throughout the course of this Monday morning. And over the next 3 hours, we've got a great mix of features on our region, talking to people from this part of the world. We're going to keep you up to date with all the very latest news, and we want your views, of course. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. The lines are open for you right now. 086 60 25000. If you're listening from outside the Republic, of course, 00 35386 60 25000. And if you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and your emails come into us at comments at highlandradio.com. Me and Lee just had a quick back and forth there as it relates to when Donegal will play Louth. The GAA's CCCC, they're meeting at lunchtime today, and they'll have the times and dates for the fixtures announced this evening. There's a lot of factors. It's not just what we want or what suits. It's about TV and who has what games and what time they throw in. So the four games, Donegal v Louth, Down v Galway, Dublin v Cork, Kerry v Cavan. It was funny at the weekend, you know, you're watching Armagh versus Galway thinking, wow, okay, first half, this is the team to beat. They are something else. And next thing you know, Galway go out and produce an amazing second half. So they'll battle it out. And the format of the competition for this year, and it changes again next year, by the way, is they go in then to the semi-finals. The winners of those four games goes into the semi-finals proper, where they'll play either Tyrone, Monaghan, Armagh and Meath. So there's still some, you know, some relatively decent pathways. Sorry, quarters. There's some very recent... decent pathways into the semis there too, isn't there? Right, okay, that's that. Brendan Devaney's going to be joining us after 11 to break down the weekend's footballing action. I'll talk about that a little bit during the papers. If you have anything to say, by the way, at all in relation to football, we're across all topics here. It's not just the news. We love the bit of sport as well. So if you want to talk football as well, 086 60 25000, let us know what your views are after the weekend's action. But let's start with the newspapers. The Derry People Donegal News. Shock new figures, as they're described, have revealed that Donegal County Council issued almost 1,000 fixed charge notices to motorists who had parked illegally in disabled parking bays over the most recent 2 year period. In 2023, the local authority issued 415 fixed charge notices for the offence of parking in a disabled parking bay without a valid disabled parking permit. And in 2024, the number of SCNs for the offence soared by around 25% to 518. Now, part of me thinks that this is part of a transition into maybe the penny actually dropping. You know, because people were parking in these spaces without fear of being caught, I think, for years, and it was very, very frustrating. But maybe now that we're starting to see lots of people getting these really quite significant fines, maybe this is the beginning now, the peak where we start to see a change of attitudes. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but you would hope, because enforcement has been one of the greater frustrations on issues such as these. And 518 people done last year. They won't do it again. And maybe the message will get about that this is completely unacceptable. Well, the figures came to light following a question on the issue, which was tabled by Councillor Thomas Sean Devine at the June meeting of Letterkenny Milford Municipal District Council. Speaking to the Donegal News, he said he was very alarmed by the number, and he criticised those motorists who showed disregard to disabled drivers by illegally occupying disabled parking spaces. The Derry News this morning. There were violent scenes in Derry as police clashed with youths on Friday night. Police moved in after youths set alight bonfire materials along the road at the entrance to Tully Alley. Police had been observing a small anti-immigration demonstration earlier in the evening. The PSNI confirmed that a police vehicle was damaged with the front window smashed. One arrest was made. A number of community workers and elected reps attended the scene in a bid to ease tensions. And tensions have been boiling over, particularly in Northern Ireland in this last week. They did calm a little, but it remains to be seen where things go from here. But we have heard people from other countries saying they're moving out, probably moving to the Republic, but that they don't feel safe in the North any longer. The Irish Times now, Iran and Israel spent the weekend exchanging rockets, effectively rockets and drones, such as modern warfare. And Israel and Iran continued to exchange attacks throughout yesterday as international leaders called for a de-escalation and the death toll climbed in both countries. At least 406 people have been killed in Iran and 654 wounded, including at least 197 civilians, according to Washington-based group Human Rights Activists. Israel said at least 13 people, including three children, had been killed there since Friday and 390 others wounded by launching its barrage of attacks in Iran. Beginning on Friday morning, Israel said it was acting to eliminate the risk of Iran developing nuclear weapons, which it perceives as a existential threat. So it's a very complicated the scam calls are starting early this week. It's a complicated situation, isn't it? Because people have been very critical of Israel's actions in Gaza, of course. Iran are a country that's somewhat isolated in the Middle East at the moment, but they are working on the establishment of nuclear weapons. And they have said, listen, you know, if we take an ocean, nowhere in the world is safe. It's a tough situation. Obviously, Israel again are being seen as the aggressors, but Iran are a threat. And I suppose Israel are acting really as a proxy for America and others, it would seem. But anyway, it rumbles on. The G7 are meeting this week, and obviously it's going to be front and centre of the agenda. Interesting that there's new figures out, and I'm not sure, you know, obviously there are children raised with different financial backgrounds, and there are those less well-off and those that are more well-off. But would it surprise you that children in less well-off homes are more than likely to have a smartphone? I hadn't thought about it, and I'm only just processing it. But anyway, it's in the Irish Independent today. More than half of Irish 8-year-olds from less advantaged areas are now owning a smartphone. It's twice the rate of those from wealthier backgrounds, according to new research. Now, I don't know what the process that would lead this to be the situation, but it is. The figures are taken from a Cyber Safe Kids assessment of almost 5,000 children in 58 primary schools, both DESH and non-DESH. They also show that children from low-income backgrounds have a higher level of exposure to harm than their peers in better-off districts. According to the research, 53% of 8-year-olds attending DESH schools own a smartphone, compared with just 22% of children the same age in non-DESH schools. The figures also show that 93% of 8-year-olds from less advantaged areas have created a social media account, compared with 69% in middle classes, the described neighbourhoods. Almost a third of primary school pupils aged 8 to 12 in DESH schools have posted videos of themselves online. So that's 1 in 3 8 to 12-year-olds have posted a video of themselves online. Around 29% have experienced cyberbullying, while 39% have public accounts on social media, a far higher percentage than non-DESH school children. So just to recap that, effectively, 4 out of 10 8 to 12-year-olds in DESH schools have public accounts on social media. So that's, in other words, it's open to anyone to see, and the majority of them are posting videos of themselves. The study confirms previous government-funded research from the ESRI, which showed that children attending more socially disadvantaged schools are more likely to have phones than wealthier households. So obviously, just looking at that from the raw data, the less money you have, you would have thought the less inclined you might be to have a mobile phone. But if you have any theory as to why, or any understanding as to why the rate of mobile phone ownership amongst 8-year-olds is far more higher in those that are attending DESH schools than those that aren't. And also, too, why would children attending DESH schools be more inclined to have public social media accounts or indeed post videos or pictures of themselves publicly? Certainly well worth digging into to try and find out, I think. Staying with education, and I remember it must be 3 or 4 years ago that I said on this show, and I wish I did take note of these things so I could pretend to sound clever, But I remember we were talking about AI, and it was the very early days of AI. And I said, I really, really hope the Department of Education are taking AI seriously and understand the impact it's going to have on our education system. And this was even before the likes of ChatGPT was released, because it was inevitable. And here we are. Education Minister Helen McEntee has been warned by her own officials that the current tools designed to detect students cheating through artificial intelligence do not and will not work. There are increasing concerns of the impact of rapidly advancing AI on the integrity of Ireland's education system. Internal documents obtained by the Irish Daily Mail reveal that officials cautioned Ms. McEntee that existing methods to catch students using generative AI, that's tools such as ChatGPT, are ineffective. The warning comes as the Department of Education grapples with how best to ensure fairness in the digital age. So that doesn't, as I say, surprise me at all. Another thing that doesn't surprise me is the latest eyeball assessment of Dublin. I don't go to Dublin very often. I don't know, once or twice a year. But the decline of Dublin as a city, you see it more clearly, I think, when you go in and out of it infrequently. And I remember the second last time I went down, it stunk. I mean, it really, really did smell. And it didn't feel terribly safe. And the most recent time I went down, it was even worse. It just looks like a city that needs a power wash or something. I don't know. And I'm not being sort of anti-Dublin. This is our capital, right? This is the first place visitors see often before they even get as far as our beautiful part of the world. So it's not having a go at Dublin, because that, you know, people might think that's a cheap shot. And I don't mean it like that. It's my genuine feeling, having gone into Dublin. It generally doesn't feel safe, and it feels dirty. And Dublin's north inner city is one of the dirtiest areas of the country when it comes to litter. And this is according to a new official survey. And Cork's north side is not much better, as both are described as seriously littered in the latest survey by the group Irish Business Against Litter. But on the plus side, the study found that more towns around the country are cleaner than last year, and the number of areas deemed littered or worse is its lowest in 5 years. But as I say, I'm not surprised that Dublin's north inner city is the worst litter black spot. On to the Irish Sun now, and you know, when you look at the amount of remains of children, 800 babies and toddlers, the remains of them are to be exhumed over the next wee while. This is all connected to the mother and baby home horror. The remains of nearly 800 babies and toddlers will be exhumed at the notorious mother and baby home in Tuam from today. Excavation work will start this morning at the site of the former Bon Secours institution. It's the latest step in the ongoing effort to try to identify the remains of infants. Imagine they're not even known to identify the remains of infants at the home between 1925 and 1961. Test excavations took place in 2016 and 2017, and a mass burial site was found in a former sewage tank. Unbelievable stuff. And finally, the back of the mirror. Jim McGuinness has hit out at Donegal, having to travel to Roscommon to play Mayo, claiming it would only happen because it's us. Kieran Moore's post-Hooter winning point for McGuinness's side meant that Mayo made their earliest championship exit in 7 years in dramatic fashion, when a draw would have been enough to see them into the last 12. I mean, after the Hooter, the last kick of the game, unbelievable. But that defeat meant that they paid the price for losing their opening group game to Cavan, who finished third in Group 1. Mayo's loss was their first at Dr. Hyde Park in 24 years after 14 games unbeaten. They had a run there of 14 unbeaten games. But McGuinness insisted that the game should never have been fixed for the venue, especially considering the traffic. My word, people were having to leave at 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning to ensure they got there on time. But it's heartbreak for Mayo again. Cavanaugh was a pint, and Donegal are through. Of course, they have home advantage in the prelims. And just in case you've switched on, they're facing Louth. Down play Galway, Dublin play Cork, Kerry play Cavan. And it'll be interesting to see how all that goes. Brendan Devaney's going to join me after 11, and we will have a run through, I suppose, the draw and yesterday's games, and what we can expect from Donegal and Tyrone and other teams that remain in that competition still. But we are now really in the business end. It's win or go home. So it's going to make all the games even extra exciting. And there's been controversy from fashion designer Karen Millen. She recently said on a TV show that it was selfish of mothers to breastfeed their babies after 6 months. Her comments received backlash, as you can imagine, with people calling her rude and judgmental. She's since apologised, but what happens is though, when you kite fly like this and you throw your views out into the world, what it does do, it gives people confidence to come out and say, you know what, you're right. So even though she's apologised, there is a narrative out there, I suppose, that it's good to counter. Dakota Nick-Menimum is Sinn Féin councillor, of course, and joins us now. Hi, Dakota.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. You know, and it's tough enough, I suppose, for women, you know, to fight for their place in society and their rights in society, against men and institutions. It's probably really unfortunate, I suppose, then when you sort of get a knock from, you know, within the sisterhood, so to speak. And that's really what happened from Karen Millen and her comments. What's your reaction to them?
Yeah, definitely. So the first thing I would say is that she is, of course, entitled to her opinion, but it's not that she specifically mentioned after 6 months there was no benefit, which just isn't true. There's no truth to that at all. Like, there's so much benefit from it. So it was really hard to hear. I had breastfed my daughter for about 13-14 months, and you know, there's such benefit to it. Like, you know, it reduces the risk of SIDS, there's less infections, and it has benefits for the woman too. And you know, breastfeeding is one of the most natural things that a woman can do. And it's hard for a woman, you know, if they don't have any support around them, or if they don't have any family or friends that have breastfed before, because it's very daunting, and it's just easier to pick up the formula. So whenever they see someone coming out saying there's no benefit after 6 months, it's just very discouraging for women.
Yeah, because, I mean, it just is completely unnecessary, isn't it? Because, you know, it's not just that you're saying, or it's not just that she was saying that, you know, why bother? She described it as selfish and then talked of the impact it might have on that child in terms of maybe being too dependent, or that the mum was doing it for their own selfish reasons. You know, there's no use in those comments at all. All they are is harmful and hurtful.
Yeah, exactly. And for someone to say it's selfish, it's the most selfless thing, because, well, for the first 6 months or so, you are completely tied to that baby. You can barely put the baby down because they do a thing called cluster feeding. So it's to regulate your supply. So they're just constantly feeding. And then, like, you know, you're the only one that can get up during the middle of the night to feed them. So, you know, to say it's selfish, it's definitely not. And it's an absolutely ridiculous comment, because to say then that it's caused like an addiction, it's ridiculous to come out with that. This is what mothers were made to do, essentially. They were to feed their young, you know, and it's just so natural, and it's completely safe. And it's like, you know, you're providing everything you need for the child, but for someone to come out with comments like that, it's very hard to listen to.
Yeah, and I think it's an area that people need to be sensitive in how they talk as well, because there's an awful lot of pressure too on mums at times, and not much support often to breastfeed. And for some mums, it's just not something that they can do for various different reasons. And I know there are people too that have tried it and will be listening and, you know, don't want to be guilted for not being fit to do it. And we're certainly not doing that. But I just think this entire space needs to be one where it's sensitive and, you know, it puts mum and baby first.
Yeah, definitely. So the main thing, obviously, is that the baby's fed, regardless of how it's fed. Mm. Fed is best. But it is very hard starting out if you're breastfeeding, you know. Like, I've had a lot of people tell me, oh, I had plans to breastfeed, but then the first time I done it, it didn't go well, so we just didn't bother. Then, you know, once you have the support in place, it's a lot easier. I was very fortunate that my my mother-in-law, she was a member of La Leche League.
So okay, that was handy. That, yeah, all right.
That was very handy. Yeah. So that was my main, you know, that was the reason I kind of did breastfeed, was listening to her, because none of my family had done it. And, you know, I had a lot of people around me saying, oh, would you not just give her a bottle, you know, because especially if she wasn't sleeping at night, and, you know, everybody blamed the breastfeeding.
Yeah,
it had nothing to do with that. So there's a lot of stuff that, like, misconceptions that come up with it as well, you know, that, oh, a breastfed baby will not sleep, whereas I know breastfed babies that do sleep, and, like, you know, they get on grand. But there is a lot of support out there. There is lactation consultants in the hospital, and I think it comes down to midwives as well a bit. Like, I know when I was in the hospital, I had to stay in for about a week. But there was one midwife in particular, she was very good, you know, at telling me how the different positions worked. Because, you know, it's not just one way to feed the baby, you can hold the baby different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, some of the other midwives didn't really have that experience, because this midwife had breastfed herself. So that definitely makes an impact too. And, like, our rates are just so low in Ireland as well.
Yeah.
Compared to other
countries.
Well, your
situation, I think, is quite typical, Dakota, because, like, things are improving somewhat here in the Northwest, but one of the issues was it skipped a couple of generations. And, you know, the aunties and mums and you know, older women in younger women's lives, they didn't have the breastfeeding experience. And, you know, we're catching up now, but you're the next generation that will be able to sort of, you know, offer support and assistance to a generation following on. But we had that kind of a generational gap that left us in this position of catch up.
Yeah, definitely. So that's definitely what I noticed in my own situation, was that I had nobody around me in my immediate family, you know, that had done it. It was just kind of considered the norm, you know, that you would give formula. It wasn't really something that considered. So I was very grateful, because it was one of the best things I'd done, definitely, without a doubt. And it's something I would definitely do again if I had another child.
Yeah. And you mentioned a little earlier on, you know, obviously, in the first instance, we talk about what the benefits are for the baby, but you reference that, you know, there are if a woman can and it suits their situation, there are benefits for her as well.
Yeah. So it'll reduce your risk of breast and ovarian cancer, and I think there's other things too, like diabetes. But it's also amazing too.
Apparently, it helps tighten the muscles as well. I don't know how that quite works, but apparently it.
Well, I know. Yeah, whenever you breastfeed after giving birth, it helps everything contract to swell or to go back down in your stomach.
I think it's great, actually, not being patronising, and it's not a political comment at all, Dakota, but someone like yourself, who people can relate to, elected into a position and to be able to speak as you are to other young girls, women, you know what I mean, is really good. And that's why it's important, I think, that our public reps are as diverse as possible. Stay there and listen to what Emma Walsh has to say. Emma, you're a first-time mum. It's tough in many different ways, isn't it, Emma? But I think the whole, you know, looking after yourself as you recover, but feeding and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot going on after a baby's born and even beforehand.
Yes, morning, Greg. Morning, Dakota. Just to firstly say, I completely agree with everything Dakota's just said. And it's really positive to hear such a positive conversation around breastfeeding, despite the controversy last week with Karen Millen and her, quite frankly, irrelevant comments and view as a woman who, you know, breastfeeding is now irrelevant to her in her stage of life, to be honest. So I don't see why she should be mum shaming and having that conversation around breastfeeding. But yeah, as a first time mum, it's an incredibly difficult, vulnerable position to find yourself in. I find myself in quite a more unique situation in that my son had been born at 29 weeks because I had severe preeclampsia and HELLP syndrome. So he spent 2 months in the neonatal intensive care unit. So I was completely separated from my son. The challenge was I wanted to breastfeed. Obviously couldn't breastfeed when he was picked up to all the machines and monitors and that, but so I had 2 months of exclusive pumping to try and regulate and mimic the breastfeeding journey, I suppose, which again, it was tough. It was very challenging. And I would completely say it was the opposite of selfish. In fact, it was selfless because you're completely giving up your body. You give up, you know, you're sharing your body, growing a baby, and then you're sharing your body again, feeding the baby. So there's nothing more selfless that you can do, in my opinion. I was really angry at hearing Karen's comments last week.
Yeah, I think those sacrifices that you made I'm sure as we had with ours, who ended up in baby ICU, the milk was seen by the medical professionals as a bottle, you know what I mean? Yeah. But you're also trying to sort of, you know, maintain the situation that you can continue breastfeeding once the child's out of ICU. So that's a big sacrifice whilst you're trying to recover yourself and worrying and waiting for updates, and then to, you know, having to stay in this routine and just do as much as you can for your baby. I mean, as you say, is there anything less selfish? I don't think so. Or anything less selfish than that?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, you know, when you're in that scenario, I suppose my journey is a bit different because I did have that intensive care element to it. So I felt a lot more, I guess, overprotective, or I felt like I needed to be doing a lot more, or really pushing myself to the limit to do as much as what I can to give my son the best start. Because, yeah, as you rightly said, you know, the nursing staff and the doctors, they always refer to the breast milk as liquid gold because it's, you know, it's full of nutrients and benefits to the baby. Obviously, as Dakota rightly pointed out, there is the benefits as well to the mother. And yeah, but it's just a shame that we have such low rates of breastfeeding in this part of the world, which is, it's such a shame because it's the most natural thing you can do, as difficult as it is. But again, what we need is the right support. We need to have the right support in place, maybe before delivery or before, you know, we talk about birth plans. And on discharge from hospitals, I think the support needs to be in place, and the signposts. Yeah.
There can be a wee bit of in terms. I mean, it depends, and it depends where you are, but there can be a bit of a cliff edge of support. You know, in terms of, you know, public health nurse visits and all that type of stuff, you know, as I say, you hear in some areas where they're just simply not available. And that is the time where you just maybe need a little bit of reassurance. You just need to be, you know, maybe a little bit of advice. I just think it's an area, especially too with the onset of postnatal depression, for an example. You know, there is this presumption that it's immediate after birth, but, you know, it can come, you know, much later than that. It's just, I think it's just an area that we need to make sure is well resourced, and that mums are as well supported as possibly that we possibly can support them, and they're obviously then their children as well at the same time.
Absolutely, because it is challenging physically and later down the line mentally, for moms, particularly first time moms, because you can only prepare so much, I think, for the birthing experience and for the new mom experience. And what I've learned is everything that I read in the books, it kind of goes out the window, because then you're really in survival mode, which is it's a brand new experience that you just cannot prepare yourself for. Mm. is being a new mom and trying to feed and nurture this new baby. I think the support, it's where it's lacking. I think then if new moms can either, how can they find that support? Obviously then you go online, and it's just finding the reputable sources, I suppose, that they can reach out to. So as Dakota mentioned, La Leche League, fantastic resource, website full of great advice and help, and I think there's a forum on there that you can ask questions. And, you know, whether that's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when you're feeding and having a, you know, hit the wall moment where you're thinking, this is going wrong, I need immediate support. You know, there are resources there, you know, and it's, I think it's about when you want to throw in the towel, I think that's where you need to say, okay, I need that extra bit of support. And I think listening to some woman named Karen Millen and her opinion is just not helpful for anyone.
I think the wider thing here for me is that it's breastfeeding today. What will it be tomorrow? Look, we want to be entertained when we watch TV, right? And we're not soft. We can take something that doesn't necessarily agree with us and process it. But there is a little bit of a problem with, I think, particularly sort of mid-afternoon TV shows and some radio shows, where it's actually just to say something controversial for the sake of saying something controversial. You'll see it on The View and other types of shows. And I think, as I say, we can all process stuff and have a debate, but I think in a race to try and get the phone lines hopping, they have to show a little bit more responsibility, I think, especially two women sitting there having the conversation.
Absolutely, because it's having an opinion is one thing, which everyone is entitled to. And my issue was it's the misinformation that she was projecting, and I think she was really kind of projecting her experience, which sounded quite negative when she did come out in her apology then. And that's fine, having that experience.
But relate that, because that's real. You know, relate that and say how you got support or where the support is lacking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think just having that major platform as national TV, just to be having those opinions, is quite dangerous. And again, that's sort of like, you know, you've got non-trained, in quotes, experts on things like Instagram. I think you're having a platform to potentially share really dangerous information. Mm-hmm. I think particularly for new moms and expectant moms, it's about finding that right support that has got the expert information to back it up. You know, going to your IBLC qualified, certified lactation consultants, midwives, you know, making sure that you know you're speaking to the right accredited people, I suppose, that you're not just listening to someone's non-expert advice.
Indeed. All right, brilliant, Emma, thanks so much. I think, you know, it's good to have that conversation out there again, and I think yours and yours, Dakota's, experiences are real, that, you know, you have done it, but it's not easy, but you can do it, and there are supports there. So look, if anything came from it, and we have these conversations I think about two or three times a year to talk about breastfeeding and the supports that are there or where they're lacking, it's really important. So Dakota, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
And best wishes to all the family. And Emma, thank you so much as well. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care. That's Councillor Dakota Enoch-Menman and also Emma Walsh there. Any views? 08660 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. And you're already texting us in. Great to get the interaction going so early in the week. Thanks, but no thanks on YouTube. Simply says breast is best. It's great for bonding with your baby. Indeed. And then for someone in a position of sort of, you know, prominence to sort of say, well, you're being selfish if you continue that bond after 6 months and it could have some sort of a detrimental impact on the child. That's not good. That's not helpful. It doesn't help at all. Just to remind you of how you get involved in the conversation here, 08660 25000, WhatsApps and texts, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Aquila says the loading bays in Letterkenny Main Street need looking after too, but the traffic wardens won't listen to delivery drivers about this. They are keen to get tickets thrown at delivery drivers, but won't deal with people parking in loading bays and leaving nowhere else for the delivery vans. That's quite a, I suppose, specific issue if you're involved in the delivery of goods, etc. Smartphone tops dumb parents, I suppose. They might at least learn to spell and do grammar. Well, that's terribly judgmental. I'm not sure that's what it's down to, but thank you. Donegal rally next weekend, and now the Donegal game. Will Donegal be able to handle all this traffic and people? No, but so you could argue it's not a terrible complaint either, is it? That, you know, we're going to be buzzing, bustling. We'll have people up visiting and out and about. But you are quite right. It is a bit of a nightmare for people probably travelling to Ballybuffet, because obviously the rally is based in Letterkenny and northwards, and Ballybuffet, if the game in fact is in McCool Park, is somewhat removed from that. But I didn't think about that. That's going to be big. Greg, I was recently at Rossinola and Tollan beaches and was shocked to find the condition of, you guessed it, the public toilets. They need power hosed before anyone could enter them. Why do we allow this? You'd never get this lack of hygiene in Spain. I don't know. The toilets, the public toilets, we need a plan. Especially in this digital age where people take pictures and comment all the time, we need a plan. Right, OK, so the proposed active travel plan scheme for Letterkenny, the scheme will run along a 1 kilometre stretch of circular road beginning at the hospital roundabout in Letterkenny and extending westwards to the Glencar Road junction. The scheme will connect the High Road and Kilmacrennan Road active travel schemes to the east and the College Road scheme to the west. Ultimately, the development strives to improve connectivity for pedestrians and cyclists to a number of key amenities in Letterkenny. Circular Road is bound by schools, residential areas, recreational and commercial facilities and healthcare institutions, all of which, they say, provide vital services to communities, improved accessibility for vulnerable road users, therefore a key objective. Now, Eunan is a resident of the Sleeve Schnacht Road in Letterkenny. It's all for you, Eunan. They're doing this all for you to make your life easier and safer. What's your views of these plans? Because I think you came to them a little later than most. You missed some of the public conversation on them.
Not at all, Greg. But before I start, I suppose I should say I left school nearly 50 years ago, so there are not many big words in my head. I'm just plain Joe. So a resident came to me last Wednesday or Thursday and asked me, what did I think about this? And I says, what are you talking about? And she said that all the right turns going into from the roundabout at the hospital to Glencar has been, you're not going to be able to turn right anymore. I says, and when did this come into play? Well, seemingly it's passed a long time ago. So I says, well, I never heard tell that you're, you would think the councillor would supply us with a bit of paperwork through the door to let us know that there's something happening. There are 100 houses on here where I live, and as far as I know, nobody got a piece of paper to say that this thing was happening. And I was talking to a few business people in the Glencar Shopping Centre on Thursday or Friday last week about it, when I heard about it, and they said they never heard tell of it either. It's, to me, Greg, it's crazy because my brother actually drives a bus onto this estate to lift children. And for at the minute, they can't turn a bus at the roundabout at Glencar. They'd have to go to Killylastnan to try and, to try and get turned, which is way, way up the top of Glencar, up to the new pub. It doesn't make sense, Greg. And are you still there?
No, I'm listening. The carriageway, they say the carriageway will be retained on Circular Road west of Long Lane, east of Long Lane. It'll be reduced from 9 metres to 6.5 metres. So that'll be 3.25 metres for each lane. And this will be achieved by removing central areas dedicated to right-hand turns and shifting the curb lines. So in terms of access in and out, particularly into your estate, it's really going to be based on drivers letting you out. So you could have 5 cars trying to get out to work from your estate, maybe even 10, and there's no real access for them out onto the road unless, you know, they're allowed out, and the traffic may be building at that point even more than it is now. And then if you're trying a turn in, you're going to have to go up and go around a roundabout and come back down the way. It's going to get pretty tasty at the entrance and exits to these estates and businesses on that road.
Well, you see, at the minute, Greg, it's actually, when the schools are all on, right, and I can see it in the morning here, it starts here in the morning from about 8 o'clock to shortly after 9. And it's bumper to bumper passing where I actually come out for my houses here. See, I'm actually on Errigal Road, just the second house in behind Simpson's shop here. That's the way into Sleeve Schnacht.
Mm.
For me, when I go out, if they get away with what they're chatting about, what they say that it's passed, but I think they shouldn't be allowed to just go ahead and do something that, without telling the rest of us. You know, we should be informed on it.
Yeah, I think it's how you're... I know what you're saying. I think it's how you're informed. So, you know, the council have used their social media, they've used the likes of Highland and local newspapers, etc. You believe there should have been a leaflet drop for affected residents. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because I'll tell you, I listen to Highland Radio nearly 7 days a week.
Mm.
But according to the discussions that were supposed to be on a couple of weeks ago, my schoolmate was buried that particular morning, and I happened to be at the funeral that day. And that was the very day, seemingly, there was a discussion on this.
All right, let's bring Mary in. Mary, you're a resident of the Errigal Road, Sleafsnacht area. What's your take on these proposed developments?
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it, Greg, when I became aware of it. And I only became aware of it a couple of weeks ago, actually, in a newspaper article where Kieran Brogan was pictured in the down at Simpsons, and saying basically that there's no right turn. And I panic bells then started to ring with me, and I've been talking to people, and people were not aware, as even the Resident Association hadn't been informed. If there was a leaflet drop, at least we would get together, obviously, and have meetings and submissions. But as Eunan said, I mean, coming out of Errigal Road, you have... my family basically live in the Glencar area, and now they would have to turn left, go down to the hospital roundabout and come up that way.
Mm.
And for me or residents, as you can say, it's over 100 houses in the estate, in order, we actually coming up Devalier Road, coming up home, wherever, you actually have to pass your turn off to go up to the roundabout, come down, and most likely join a tailback, because the traffic is horrendous.
Yeah, it is. When you think of that additional the additional movement of that traffic, indeed. Well, both of you are residents, and you mentioned business. John Collins, director of Simpson Supermarket in Glencar, and the amount, I think people don't necessarily understand, Joe, with a successful business like yours and other businesses there, the amount of footfall, in inverted commas, or vehicle traffic exiting, accessing on a daily basis, Joe.
Yeah, well, we would have a substantial footfall. We'd have over 40,000 customers coming through the door every month. And we just think that this, while we did have meetings with the council did come to us, and they really came to us to more or less tell us, look, this is going to go ahead. It came to assure us that it would work, but we're not convinced that it'll work, for the simple reason that there's going to be two cycle lanes, one up, one down, on one side of the road. The right turn box into our own supermarket is going to be removed.
Mm.
And we just think it's going to be a risk to cyclists and to customers.
So if I'm driving up past the hospital, Joe, how do I get into your business under the new proposals?
When you're driving up, there's a right turning box where you can turn in without blocking the other traffic that's coming up.
Yeah, but when that's gone, how do I get in?
Well, you're just going to block the traffic that's already there, that's behind you, until you get turned.
Yeah.
And you've also, as you know, you've the traffic, the cars coming down the hill, and you've also the cyclists coming down the hill. Now, they say they're going to put a yellow box, but I can't see how cyclists coming down the hill will be able to manage that yellow box. You know, I think just... There's also, the carriageway is going to be narrower, so there's also the issue of heavy goods vehicles trying to turn in and heavy goods vehicles meeting each other. So we don't think it's viable, but they've basically told us this is going to go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I know you get big vehicles going in there. Their turning space requires, they're certainly going to have to use both lanes, because it's going to be much narrower. And factor into that too, potential town bus going up and down every couple of hours or a couple of times of hours with no pull in place to let passengers off or on.
Well, like there's an actual bus stop outside outside close to our entrance at the minute, but that bus, it's not a large bus, he actually parks in the car park as opposed to parking on the road. Ah. He pulls into the car park and lets people off there, and people can get on there.
Okay, well, one of our elected reps, when I say our, I mean yours, elected reps, is Councillor Jerry McMonagall, and you're in favour of this, Jerry, and from everything I'm hearing, because I'm listening to those that are affected by it, I'm not, it makes very, very little sense and seems to be only pushing us towards snarling up the traffic whilst there are cycle lanes that may or may not be used.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. This primarily is a road safety works, and it's about getting people to be able to get about the town in a safer way. The Sherpa Road has its problems with traffic at the minute. It is at times a very fast road and very dangerous for pedestrians and indeed cyclists. The Sherpa Road is one of 11 active travel programs that we have been discussing in council for this last 3 years. There's been a number of public consultations. It's been well aired out there. People had ample time to make their concerns known. Look, I live in the area. I know what.
So why are you in favour of it?
Well, like I say, I think it's going to make it safer. I think we have to get away from the dependence on cars. I think there's an onus on us as a local council to ensure the safety of everyone and the accessibility of everyone.
I don't mean it's smart, but I mean, do you think you're going to cycle to a council meeting now?
Well, I'll cycle the fair, but...
No,
but,
I'm really not... I'm genuinely not being smart, Jerry, but I mean, do you think now, because obviously you live in that area, if there's a meeting down at the council offices, can you see yourself cycling up and down now?
Well, after these active travel programmes are put in place and routes, I will have that choice. Mm. I currently don't have that choice because I think it's unsafe as someone who's cycled for many years.
What year does he think that's going to come in?
Well, it's going to happen pretty quickly. No, that'll all happen very quickly. Union, if that is union, that's going to happen pretty quickly.
It took them 2 years to do from the Dry Arch to the station, the roundabout there.
Mm. Listen, there's an awful lot of interest in this story, but I'm right up against it with the news. Joe, I might come back to you after 10 if you're available. Mary and Union, thank you very much indeed.
That's okay.
We'll speak to you off air, if that's okay, Jerry, to see if you might be able to come back with us after a 10. But if you've a meeting or something, we fully understand that too. But Caroline will be in touch with you. That just sort of accelerates. In terms of interest. We'll be back after the news and the obituary notices.